Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Time now for our Friday gathering, and this week I'm joined by Labour Party leader and TD for Dublin Bay South, Ivana Bacik. We've Green Party Senator and spokesperson for Rural Development and Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Roisin Garvey, Special Correspondent at the Irish Examiner, Mick Clifford, and Political Correspondent with the Sunday Times, Claire Scott. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. I want to start with the clearing of migrant tents yesterday. I read today in the Irish Independent online, they had a report filed at 8 o'clock, that there are tents in Ball's Bridge now in Dublin. There's a photograph there of about 8 tents. So the problem just seems to be moving a little further away from the IPAS office as those clearances happen. Roisin, I'll come to you first. Like, it does seem very clear now that the government policy of moving the problem on without any proper solution in place, it's not working. They just keep popping up somewhere else because there's nowhere for these people to go.
Yeah, I suppose that's why they're looking at this new strategy now to have, like, you know, state-owned facilities that'll have, like, I think they want to run out 8 of them with 200, accommodation for 200 in each of those places. They just need to get them built now and get them up and running. And they're doing up Columns Barracks, for example, and they're talking about doing some modular units. But yeah, look, the numbers are unprecedented, and on the back of 75,000 Ukrainians being housed as well, it's been really, really challenging. There's no doubt about it. I do wonder if there hadn't been a Ukrainian war, would there have been half this visibility? You know, because we've had IPAs coming here since the early 90s, but the numbers have definitely gone massively up on the back of a Ukrainian war. So
we've had that war happening now for 2 years.
Two years.
Surely you would agree that an interim plan needs to be found now where we don't see these tents being pitched by these people who have nowhere to go the next day after a clearance happens.
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants this, you know. Nobody wants people arriving here and going straight into tents. They are looking at, they're doubling the amount of staff now to look at the processing times. Now, the processing times have speeded up by 50% since last year, so that's something. But yeah, you're right. We've had 2 years. There's a consultation happening at the moment, and apparently the strategy is coming out at the end of this month. The sooner the better, because we need a long-term plan. Mm-hmm. I do know Minister Roger O'Gorman came into government hoping to get rid of the whole direct provision system, but that went to the wall when the Ukrainian war started. Now, 2 years later, they're looking at moving towards just state-owned and not giving, you know, all the money to private enterprise. Okay, so that is something that's coming down the tracks as soon as possible,
right,
I suppose.
Ivana, given where the IPAS office is located, I mean, this is your constituency. I know you've been there a number of times, as recently as yesterday, where these tents were and where they were moved from. Would you support an accommodation facility being built in Dublin Bay South to help these people who are going to that office?
Well, first of all, Claire, when we speak about clearances, I suppose we must remember these are people involved and people who've come here seeking refuge, many cases from war, from persecution. I've met so many now who've come here, who want to make a better life, who have left terrible situations and gone through awful scenarios to get here. And so when we speak of clearances, I think sometimes we overlook that human
aspect.
Well,
that's the question I'm asking. Where should these people be sent to? It is desperately unfair, isn't it, that they're being moved
unfair
in this way? But where should they be placed to avoid this issue with the tents arising and forcing these people to live in these circumstances with no facilities?
Absolutely. And it is inhumane and unsustainable. It is a clear failure of government policy. We have volunteers who I really want to commend. I was up with them on Wednesday night at the canal before the operation yesterday morning, where about 100 men were meeting with our volunteers, our local group, who've been so good and so humane. But clearly volunteers can't fill the gap. Government have failed in their policy. It's beginning to look, as I've said, like a sort of government strategy, a Rwanda policy, if you like, to deter people from coming here. You've asked me about facilities in Dublin Bay South. Yes, I absolutely do support that, Claire. I've indeed, as have other local reps for Labour, we have called for state-owned sites in the constituency, like Bagot Street Hospital, sitting vacant and derelict, a real blight, in fact. It should be repurposed for accommodation for those who've come seeking refuge. We have already quite a number of centres in the constituency, and indeed I've set up support groups, for welcome groups, D6 and D4 for all welcome groups, to ensure the support with integration of the individuals who are in those centres. And we've seen superb instances
of integration.
But you're
saying, you suspect this is government policy. They want the tents to be there. They want them to be seen.
Well, we're beginning to wonder about this, Claire, because Roisin rightly says the government should move to provide state-owned facilities.
Nobody wants people in tents. Roisin, I don't think it's fair to call it a Rwanda solution.
May I just finish? You know, in 2020, The Catherine Day's expert group recommended a move to large state-owned, state-run reception integration centres. We saw the white paper in 2021 follow up on this, recommending the building of 6 such centres around the country. We support that, but we've seen no action from government on that. We have seen certainly welcome provision of some accommodation in Central Mental Hospital in Crooksling and others at scale, but we need to see urgency devoted to this and a whole of government
Roisin,
approach.
You
which
wanted
has not
to,
been
to respond
today.
To this, because the accusation is that this is a strategy, a deterrent.
Yeah, I mean, that's really underhanded. I mean, who do you think is thinking like that? Like Roger O'Gorman, me? Like, who is going to do that? I just don't believe that's true. Nobody wants these people in tents. And like, it is time that we got, I mean, they are moving towards a proper strategy now, but all these things take time. You know yourself, you were in government, and it's not as if Labour got huge things achieved. Everything takes so bloody long. And 2 years later is not a very long time to try and get this strategy right. And at the end of the month, hopefully we will see people moving into Collins Barracks and get, we're going to move to modular units, which will be much quicker than building houses. So at least I think you can't say we're not trying at least. But I think it's been so difficult because the numbers have been so high on a daily basis that the department have been left with just dealing with, you know, a daily issue. It's been very hard to have a long term plan.
It's far worse than logistics, though, to be fair, Roisin. I mean, there's a huge political element to the whole thing.
Well, I think we've been under resourced. Some of the departments have.
Okay, but there is also a political element. I mean, the Catherine Day report is now at least
not
3 years old.
Not the whole government's fault.
And it certainly has the appearance that those 6 centres, which should be big centres, state-run, will probably not be announced this side of a general election. Similarly, we have a scenario whereby there's a plan in the short term to set up these camps with the army tents and what have you, which are a lot better than the scenario at the
Absolutely.
Grand Canal, admittedly.
Absolutely.
But again, those have not been announced and presumably they won't be decided to European elections. So there's definitely political, and the government, the actions of the government in reducing the level of supports for Ukrainians, that people have largely said that's to stop what is described as a pull factor. So for somebody to suggest that the policy in relation to these tents is similarly to not be regarded as a pull factor, it's pretty reasonable that that suggestion is being
put. I wouldn't compare it to the Rwanda idea that she accuses of being like a Rwanda situation.
I just don't agree with that.
You know exactly what I meant, and I think that's evident. And indeed, the new Taoiseach himself has said that there was, it appeared, a sort of a tacit acceptance of the build-up of tented accommodation on Mount Street for a long time before he took office. To be fair to him, he seems to have taken more responsibility. But for many months now, we in Labour have been calling out the government and the previous Taoiseach for failing to coordinate a whole of government approach, and indeed for leaving the entirety of responsibility for accommodation, for refugee accommodation, on one department.
Claire Scott, we need a whole of government approach.
It is a failure of government policy.
All right.
Claire Scott, at the end of March, we saw Roger O'Gorman come out with an updated plan for accommodation for international protection, which included an interim plan and a long term plan. So the long term plan is 38,000 beds by 2028. The interim plan includes a mix of HSC state-owned land where tented accommodation can be put, but also the acquiring of commercial buildings, empty office blocks. The issue there is that we haven't seen any movement on that, and I think that is key. Mm-hmm. I think looking at planning legislation in order to make it more viable for commercial building owners to come on board, I think they're looking at kind of extending the change of use policy there from 2028 to 2030, which would kind of make it more viable for, those building owners to sort of offer up buildings in order to accommodate IPs. But there's been very little movement on that. That is a key part of this interim strategy launched by Roger O'Gorman.
I mean, Mick mentioned the politics around all of this and the timing. We're in a cycle now where we're running up to the local and European elections. Possibly then we may have a general election coming up in the autumn. It's unlikely, isn't it, that those sites will be announced while we're in this period?
I think so, particularly when the Department of Housing needs to play ball in all of this, and we have a planning bill that is being held up. And I just think there's so many roadblocks in terms of that plan that was announced in March. So I think this constant cycle of seeing tents pop up around the city will continue.
I can't speak on behalf of the Green Party. We don't want to wait. We don't want to wait for till after an election. That's not the kind of politics we play.
Let's see action now. We want to come in.
Roger O'Gorman's been working 18-hour days for the last 2 years on this, so I'm just going to defend him completely. There might be other government issues, but I'm just saying, as a party, this is abhorrent. We came in here trying to get rid of direct provision, and we didn't manage to do that because of the Ukrainian crisis.
Yeah, just one other element to it. There is, in this European local election cycle, and in general, on one level, a sense of moral panic about what's being described as immigration. What is actually at issue is asylum seekers, and what is at issue in that is the cohort of asylum seekers who are not accepted for protection here. Now, that's a tiny number. What's really at issue is accommodating asylum seekers who come in here. And the longer the government delay with that, the greater the potential for that kind of moral panic to spread. Yeah. And we'll see rise of elements of the so-called far right and their ideology leaking into the mainstream, as we're already seeing it. As long as the government don't tackle this whole issue of accommodating asylum seekers.
But you seemed to suggest earlier that's unlikely to happen while we're in the run-up to
I believe so, particularly in terms of the large centres that were proposed by Catherine Day's group, simply because they know there's going to be hassle over where exactly they might be located. But they're going to have to do that because it's far worse in terms of the scenario whereby you have private interests. We see that in towns around the country whereby hotels are being taken over and the reaction there is to that. And all of this feeds in to that ugly kind of sentiment that's out there now, particularly coming up.
All right. And you have said that is not the Green Party's position.
No, we have been warning the government about
this. But we do need to see action on it. So it's all very well to say that's not the position of one party in government. But what we have failed to see is a coherent whole of government approach to this. What we need to see is political leadership. And Mick is quite right. It is a matter of political will. We've seen how the state can pivot to providing at scale accommodation where necessary at the sites I've mentioned. There are plenty of other sites available. And again, we've called on the Department of Defence, the Department of Health, the Department of Housing to step up to provide the Department of Integration with a list of sites which could be repurposed or used for large scale accommodation. We saw the President.
I think the processing their applications is really
President
important.
President might. Because it is, of course.
We need that labour force.
And there's one other thing.
We need jobs in every sector, but we don't have enough people.
We need to see government increase the numbers of legal pathways for people to be able to come here and work, expand the critical skills lists, ensure that people can come through legal pathways.
I want to move on to the findings this week, Roisin, if you don't mind, from the Environmental Protection Agency. So we could be on the hook here for between 3 and 8 billion euro in fines for missing legally binding targets on reducing carbon emissions. Claire, I might start with you on this. I mean, we do have a plan in place, even though we were told that if we do everything in the plan, we mightn't hit the targets. It's delivery, though, that seems to be the problem, right?
Delivery is the issue. And I think one of the things that Eamon Ryan, Minister for Transport, came out with in recent days after the publication of that EPA report is that a lot of the measures within the Climate Action Plan haven't been allocated in that report. So I think one of the lines was the plan for solar panels and businesses and farms. And then there's also a biomethane plan introduced, which will allow farmers not to use imported gas. And then there was also a traffic reduction plan for Dublin that will be issued over the summer that hasn't been factored in as well. But I think the point, as you say, is it's about delivery, it's about actioning. And I think one of the key issues with this is that it seems to be the Green Party within government who is driving this. You don't really see Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael leadership really pushing for these changes as much as the Greens are and other parties within opposition. So that's a big factor. I think you need, much like every other crisis in this country, you need a whole of government approach in order to drive any sort of delivery here.
Well, Ivana, from the Labour Party's point of view, like what is your big idea around delivery of changes, or what could be done in transport, in energy, in agriculture to transform our ambition and the delivery of reductions in carbon emissions?
Well, first to say we absolutely support the ambition that's there across government. We believe that's essential in order to meet our binding targets. But we're really alarmed at the report from the EPA this week, which says the best case scenario is that government will will only achieve a 29% reduction by 2030,
so
not a 51% reduction.
So
what we would do, well, first of all, we would have published the National Energy and Climate Plan earlier. And indeed, I asked the Taoiseach about this on Wednesday in the Dáil. When would it be published? Because there seems to be an element of wishful thinking. I saw the reports in the paper on Wednesday that Minister Ryan had brought that to Cabinet, and that within it there's a list of additional measures which we would support, including the biomethane measures. But we do need to see more ambition on solar, which is something we in Labour have been pushing on solar panels, and indeed on transport. And we have pushed for a climate
ticket.
Why
are you laughing at that, Roisin?
I'm not laughing, I'm smiling, because we have 100 houses every day. Every single day there's 100 more houses getting covered in solar panels. I'd like to see...
So it's happening, you're
saying?
It's
great to see but it needs to happen at larger scale.
All of a sudden Labour are all about solar panels, but we are the ones that had to, the first week we came into... Sorry, before the first week I was in government, I had to bring in a law to get rid of planning permission. There were so many obstacles created by previous governments that Labour were part of. So we had to get rid of the planning permission. We've now got rid of the VAT. We're offering a grant for €2,100. It's like a solar revolution. And people every day are saying to me how better they feel and how much more aware they are of electricity usage, because they're creating it themselves. They're not giving the money to big companies. They control more of their bills. And also we put it on every school, farm, 60%. I meet loads of farmers that are now selling it back to the grid. You know, there is a solar revolution going on at this very moment. So,
but do you not welcome the Labour Party saying we support everything that you're doing? We just want you to do it
quicker. No, but I just love to know how much better Labour saying we could be doing more. But I mean,
it's not Labour, Roisin. The EPA. Roisin, no, really, I've had enough of the cheap political point scoring. The Environmental Protection.
I want to know what would you do on the solar?
The Environmental Protection Agency this week, not any opposition party, this week, the EPA, for the third year in a row, published a report that shows that we will be falling short as a country of meeting our legally binding targets by 2030. Well, I'm delighted you know
Claire
it,
already has pointed that out.
But let's see more action from government.
Yeah,
on this.
I want
friends
more action on government. I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
Friends of the Earth say this is alarming and disappointing. Minister Ryan and indeed the Taoiseach, in response to me on Wednesday, have promised to produce this week to publish the revised National Energy and Climate Plan, which will contain in it additional measures. We want to see what additional measures the government is proposing bring up that shortfall.
Sorry, but Claire asked you what you would do on solar. I'm as alarmed as you. I'm
Roisin,
in the Green Party because I'm much more environmentally conscious than people who choose to be Labour.
Really?
No, I'm 30 years an environmental activist. So for you to say that...
Roisin, I was a founding member of... No, listen to me.
I want to hear the solutions.
Listen to me.
I was a founding
member.
What you would do.
Just Roisin, just let
Genuinely,
her respond.
Let's hear the solutions then.
Roisin, you can keep
solar.
Haranguing other people
I'm
on
haranguing.
The panel all you like.
I'm allowed to challenge
Roisin,
you,
Roisin, just let her respond and then we'll come back to you.
Thank you. I was a founding member of Friends of the Earth Ireland. In 2007, when I was first elected to the Shannon, I introduced the first bill in the Dáil or Shannon seeking to establish legally binding climate targets. So don't start lecturing me, please, on environmental credentials. I think, it's deeply patronising. We have put in our alternative budget the need to have a vastly ramped up system of ensuring solar panels are put on all public buildings, on schools. And we absolutely acknowledge progress, as we acknowledge progress in the rollout of EV vehicles. But what we haven't seen is the progress of the scale to meet our legally binding target of 51%. And that is unarguable because that is contained in the EPA
report.
Well,
we seem to be having an argument here about who is greener, but we know, and we've seen this across Europe, that these measures, a lot of these measures that we need to put in place, they're not politically popular, are they?
That's exactly it. And not only that, it's been cast particularly among a lot of people in the main parties of government, excluding the Green Zone. To be fair, I think the Greens are making the effort. It's been cast as the so-called environmental lobby versus farmers, which I think is unfair to farmers because there's huge elements within the farming community that are doing everything possible. It's also unfair to cast what's an existential threat to the way we live as coming from a so-called environmental lobby. But like you say, politically, it's regarded as being unpalatable. Opinion polls suggest that there is a large cohort out there of the public who are worried about climate change, but it would seem that most of the political parties don't believe that will transfer into people having transformative change to be able to bring about these emissions, and that's where we're stuck at the moment.
I mean, I think you've got to bring it back down to the local for people to understand, and maybe other parties in government to understand why this is important. Ivana, I really admire you, so I don't want you to take it personally when I ask what your solar solutions are, because we are doing as much as we can, and actually that's why we need to get those passes, those work visas, because we don't have enough people to put the solar panels up in the roofs. My son is putting up 50 panels a day with a company he's just joined as a labourer, so like we don't have enough people to do it. You know, all the supports are there from government. government, I would say thanks to the Green Party, but in fairness, you know, we got the money from the Minister for Finance, that all the sports are there, but we are struggling to get them up as quick as the demand is there, basically. So we just need, but I do see a ramping up because of apprenticeships coming on stream and hopefully a new labour force thanks to migration into the country as well. But I do think that the report was depressing in some ways, saying we can only get to 30% instead of 50%, but also it was, the modelling was based on what we've done to date, whereas this is only, we're literally only getting started because it's taken us a few years to get things across the line.
Well,
so like the rollout of Zevi, you know, the rollout of chargers is a massive thing that's coming next year, and there's lots of other things coming down in the next couple of years. It just takes time, so the first few years are going to be the slowest.
We'll move on to the Children's Hospital now, because we heard yesterday that we mightn't see it. The Development Board said it would be handed over in February of 2025, but then we have the fit out. Claire, you might just talk to us about this, but members of the committee seemed to establish, or claimed at least, that that hospital might not admit patients until 2026, which is extraordinary really, to consider, you know, when this thing started and how much it has cost. Do you think people are more worried about the opening date or the cost of it now?
I think both. I think what is particularly concerning as well is to see the breakdown in relationship between government, between the board and between the contractor as well. That Taoiseach making some fairly inflammatory remarks during leaders' questions yesterday in response to Piers Doherty over, you know, BAM's motivation around pushing out goalposts and all the rest of it. So I think that's concerning. I think that confrontation in itself could even lead to delays and then increase costs. So ultimately, you know, all of this leads to concern about when actually the first children will actually be treated in this hospital.
Well, it was explained to us here yesterday on the programme that actually it is a contract that was put in place right at the start that has left us in this position, and that the levers that exist are being used, but there's not really that much that we can do in terms of controlling costs and the date that it's going to be handed over. Ivana, I don't know if you agree with that assessment, that all that can be done is being done. That is the government's response here.
Well, look, first thing, we do need a state-of-the-art children's hospital. It's very welcome, you know, to see it taking shape on the positive side. I had the pleasure of visiting it last year. It, you know, there's a great deal has been done. So that's to be positive
and
about
it. And it will be a great facility, I believe, from what I read about it.
But it's deeply frustrating to see the ongoing delays, the ongoing cost overruns. As Alan Kelly said, I think, rightly yesterday, it's like a bad episode of Room to Improve on speed. And you know, that's, I suppose, being somewhat light-hearted about it. But it is desperately serious because we're seeing, you know, rundown facilities for children and children therefore missing out while this is delayed and stalled. It's hard to believe that more can't be done because, you know, we're certainly seeing, even since the Public Accounts Committee hearing yesterday, more reports about the conciliation process, that the contractors are seeking additional payments from the state in respect of delays they say are attributable to the client. So, you know, I do think the Minister for Health should come before the Dáil after the recess, after the local and European elections, so that we can get greater clarity about the about what is now really the anticipated opening date, because we still have so little clarity. It's highly speculative, it seems, the dates we've been given, to February 2025, potentially August 2025, before we see any actual opening of the hospital. So I think we need to hear from the Minister for Health how he now proposes, albeit, you know, lots of things like COVID have been out of the control of any minister, but now with this Minister for Health, what does he propose to do is to ensure that we don't see any more delays and overruns of cost? Will he give a final timeline to the contractor and the board to get them to get together, resolve the issues and ensure that the hospital can
seems
open?
To be nobody nigh on impossible to do that from
but
what we heard yesterday.
Again, it's
a huge
political
amount
will.
That goes back to the contract. But you see, the problem is, if you went back to the contract, if you had a design and build proposal for a contractor, that they would effectively take on a huge amount of this risk that we've got into with the mounting cost, they might have added 20-25% to the original contract. And then would there be a reluctance, particularly in the permanent government, to have a contract that much bigger? We can see in retrospect that would have made perfect sense. But at the time, they didn't. And that's one huge learning that I think we need to take from it, that any big infrastructure, you take into account the possible risks that are involved and you ensure that the contractor takes on a number of those risks by giving the contractor more than what might otherwise be the case. Now, as well as that, you had building inflation, you've thousands of specifications in a job like that, they're going to add to it. But the amount it's gone up by is just crazy.
And Mick, I know you were an engineer in a previous life.
I wouldn't say that too loudly now.
New news to a lot lot of us. But when you heard yesterday that there were over 23,000 adjustments to the plans, that's what the board asked of the contractor. Is that surprising?
It sounds a bit high, but that there would be a huge number of adjustments would not be unusual in a project that size. And that specific account wouldn't have been taken of them in the original contract.
And included in that, would it be minor things like move a light switch?
Yeah, no, there are stuff that's put in there that would come back on the board and by extension on the state rather than the contractor because they'd be added as they went along. Mm-hmm. But that goes back again to the original thing. Where does the risk and the inherent costs are going to come, where does that lie in the original contract? And I think that is definitely something we should look at going into the future, that if it means a design and build, if it means that the contractor's taking on more risk, and if that means that the original cost is higher, then that's something that's to be taken into account. Because remember, if you added 20-25% onto the original cost, it would still be a fraction of what we're paying now. Now, you have to take into account, as I say, the amount of inflation, COVID, etc. But yeah, even taking that into account.
650 million to where are we at now? 2.24 billion, so likely for instance, to be a bit more.
If the original one, if they had said the original one was going to be, say, let's for argument's sake, say 950 million, there'd have been a lot of grief about that at the time. But we can see in retrospect that would have made far more sense.
Okay, Roisin, can I come to you? Because Ivana's suggestion here that the minister now needs to say, this is the date, this is when it will be open, and put pressure both on the government side, on the board and on the contractor to stick to that. Do you think that's possible given what you heard yesterday?
Well, look, they had said it would be December. Now they're saying they're 8 weeks behind. And if they stick to that, which they really need to at this stage, the whole country is up in arms, including, you know, the minister and the board. Like, then it should be opened in August 2025. That's what they're still saying now. But at this stage, I think people are just losing faith. It's going on so long. But I don't know if it would be wise of the minister to tell us all a definite date at this moment. But I do think the contractors have said that they'll be finished in February. It takes 6 months to fit out. So let's just keep pushing for that. And that's what the minister would be pushing for, and the whole government, and I'm sure opposition too. Get it open as soon as possible. And let's stick to what they said. They're saying August 2025. All right. And that's what we need for especially the children.
Well, we'll certainly be calling for the Minister for Health to come into the Dáil after the recess to give us some clarity on whether he will in fact set a date, because I think it is important that he would set that in conjunction with the board and with the contractor, and that we would have some assurances on costs, because since the PAC hearings yesterday, as I say, we now have reports that there may be additional payments made under the conciliation process to the contractor that weren't built into that assessment of that 2.24 billion as we understand.
So it could be higher.
Well, that's the concern.
Okay. All right, we leave it there. Ivana Bacik, Roisin Garvey, Claire Scott and Mick Clifford, thank you all very much for being with us. Let's take a quick break.